session one of My His Story. This is the series of Dennis Lee or Josiah David. Okay, so we're just going to get on it, and we'll get started on it here in a minute. All right, so get ready, take one. Okay, I think it's time now for me to address some of these things that have been brought up by this disgruntled ex-employee. And it's really unfortunate that, you know, all this is going on, except that at the same time, I think it might be good for us to revise this. I, a while back, did give all the information to the team leaders and have the team leaders then know what was going on, but it's been a while since I did that, and you just, I can't update this all the time. So what I think I'm going to do is just lay down a record of this, and we'll take issues that this person is bringing up from who is Josiah David, from my background, and we'll find out together from records that I have and documents that I have and newspaper articles that I have and court records that I have, et cetera, so that you can kind of get the rest of the story, and you'll find out that there ain't no there there. But you'll also maybe find out why I'm kind of like absolutely not willing to back down from anything that I'm doing. And so if we're going to go get something done, we're going to go get something done. That's the end of it. So it might be good. You might actually learn more about me. I may learn more about you. We are going to go out and change the world. So anyway, today in our first series of this, I want to address the name change and the fact that, oh, my God, you mean I have two different names? You know, my wife actually had a maiden name before she married me, and then we changed her name, too. So she's got three names. Wow. Anyway, and then we're also going to deal with, you're kidding me. You mean Josiah David has been in prison? And, yes, I was in prison for a little over a year, about 14 months. And I don't know, it wasn't the best experience I've ever had in my life, but it wasn't the worst one either. And I, there's a lot of stories there, too. I can tell you a lot about prison. I almost got killed in there. But anyway, I'm going to deal with the prison thing, too, so that you can see that there wasn't a whole lot of there either. So I'll get into both of those tonight, and then we'll get into some more later on. We'll just keep doing it as long as you guys are interested in listening, any of you, then I'll keep going. Now, let's get into the name change. 43 years ago, I was in my first 40-day fast, about 28 days in, and God made it clear on that fast that he was going to change my name. This was a fast where I was fasting with God to confirm the things that I had been told I was going to do that just didn't make any sense to me at all, because nothing I was told I was going to do was me. But if God says I'm going to do something, I guess he knows better than I do, and I'm going to do it. So God made it clear that he was going to, on that fast 28 days in, he was going to change my name from Dennis Lee, a name that I am very proud of. I am descendant from Robert E. Lee, and it's my birth name. That he was going to change my name 43 years ago to Josiah David. And so I thought, okay. I asked him when he told me when he wanted me to change it, and he said, you'll know when. So I thought, okay. I told my wife, who has to change her name too. I'm not going to be one name and she's something else. And she's 100% Jewish. And she was fine with the name, Josiah David, Allison David. So she was working part-time for a lawyer had a part-time job, kind of getting a little extra income for us. We didn't have much. And had him start the process for the name change for her and me. We didn't have any kids at that point in time. We'd just been married. So my earthly father, who I love dearly, asked me to please not change my name until after he died. He just didn't feel good about it. And I love him greatly, absolutely, and so I agreed. So my wife's name change to Allison David went through, and I did not accept mine when mine came up. So she was Allison David, and I was Dennis Lee, until my father would pass on. So my wife's name change to Allison David went through. Mine had not come in, and when it did, I didn't accept it. So for almost 40 years, my wife and kids had the last name of David, and I was, my last name was Lee, Dennis Lee, L-E-E. By the time my dad died, I had become nationally well known as Dennis Lee, and I really couldn't change my name. And the Lord had said, you'll know when. So that wasn't the time. So then I got involved in this project. I went through all of the other projects that I will be relating to you if you hang in and want to know about it. And then I got involved in this project initially as Dennis Lee. When I first got involved, my name was Dennis Lee. I wasn't ashamed of the name in any way. There's no reason for me to be ashamed, as I hope you're going to find out if you listen to all the different things that I got involved in. So anyway, we couldn't get anything done with me operating as Dennis Lee. I was pretty much doing everything. New recruits were checking my background, and then they wanted to know when we were going to do free electricity and free energy and all the other things, run cars on water and run cars on fossil fuel straight out of the ground, just filtered. I'm involved in lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of different technologies. So I'm pretty well known. And some people were kind of like, hey, when are you going to do that? And it got in the way of us being able to do anything else. I had made a deal with the government in my other energy projects that I would leave them alone if they would leave me alone. So that was my last run-in with the government. We finally made a deal that I'd leave them alone if they'd leave me alone. So I certainly did not want to stir up that pot again and get into free energy and all the other things that I had said, okay, hey, I'll back down and I'll leave you alone if you'll leave me alone. So I asked the Lord for permission to change my name to Josiah Den, and he made it clear that I was on a new mission, and it was perfectly fine for me to change my name. So the board of directors of Provision, who knows all about me and have recently drafted a little letter to that effect, as did Bill Lipkus. Bill Lipkus was fully, absolutely aware of the things that I'm going to be telling you. And Roy Lanza was fully aware of the things I'm going to be telling you. And Dennis Joachim was fully aware of the things I was going to be telling you. And I told a bunch of you as team leaders the things that I'm about to be telling you, some of them. Anyway, I'm not legally required to relate anything. I could just change my name. There was no outstanding thing for me and nothing that made the judges squeamish about me changing my name. Everything's actually pretty straightforward. So my earthly dad named me originally, and my heavenly father renamed me, like he did Abraham and Peter and whoever else he wants to. So it's not as mysterious as anybody might think. The Dennis Lee saga was over, and I could retire and do whatever I wanted to do. But this company involved a lot of the guys who were involved with me in my previous project, which we are going to discuss tonight. Where they were denied their rewards for their participation in an energy project that very powerful energy companies had worked hard to keep from happening. I don't think it requires a major stretch of the imagination to know that if you came up with a pill that killed the that cured the common cold, somebody would kill you. If you came up with a way, and I know somebody that did that, that would turn a heroin addict into a dry, sober person that didn't even have any addiction, somebody would try to kill him, and somebody did. If somebody came up with a way to eliminate fossil fuels, I don't think it takes a lot of imagination to know that he would receive one hell of a lot of harassment from the energy czars. Anyway, I had worked hard to keep that from happening to the people that were with me because anybody that supported me, they were losing right alongside of me. And I didn't think that was very fair. So I thought it was the least that I could do to use my skills, experience, and more importantly, my walk with my advisor, God Almighty, who had shown me how to produce free energy technologies to help them design this amazing project. And I do not think we'll encounter the same opposition that I did in the free energy project, but if we do, I'll probably act exactly the same way. So I'm here rather than being retired and cashing it in and saying, okay, I've been beat up enough and pushed enough and discredited enough and beat to death by everything enough that I can just go off into the pasture now and take it easy. But I want to go do that, but only until we can get this thing launched. Then I'm taking my lady and we're going home. Anyway, this is your and their, people who had worked with me with energy before, gift from me and God. That's what this is. We started that company on $500 and haven't looked back. And I built that company for them. They own it. Anyway, I was told by God and several well-known prophets, we'll go back now to why I went to prison. That's what I got to tell you about my name change. My name change was, the board even came and asked me, hey, could you do that? Could you just at least call yourself something else? Because we can't get anything done with that. And I said, sure, no problem. I mean, God already gave me a name, and he told me when I'd have it, I'd use it, and I prayed to him about it, and he said, why not? So I changed my name to Josiah David to try to be able to do this program without the interference of all the other things I had in my life. And actually, God had changed it 43 years ago. About time, now I finally had the same name my wife did and my kids did. It was kind of nice. Anyway, I was told by God and several known prophets that I would do something amazing in the field of energy, in prophecy. I had no background in science or math, no classes in college that related to anything like physics or anything like that. But okay, if that's what God wants. It made no sense to me. I was a big energy consumer, and the last thing I was an environmentalist. So I did develop what God wants, and even though it didn't make any sense to me, I did develop the most efficient super heat pump that has ever been developed in the history of heat pumps and refrigeration. If you know anything about low temperature phase change, my heat pump got an average COP in most parts of the United States of America of 6.1, and it ran day and night, all year round. Average COP of 6 to 1. 6 units of energy out, BTUs of heat energy out of the compressor for every 1 unit of electricity that went in. 3 times the average COP of any other heat pump made other than the ground source heat pump, which is not a real smart thing to do. You have to tear up all the ground and stuff to make that happen. Costs a lot of money to build it, install it, and it only gets an average COP of 4 to 1. Mine gets an average COP of 6 to 1. The one who developed the ground source heat pump got an award from the Department of Energy as the invention of the year. He was about 6 miles away from me in Massachusetts when he got that award, and I'd already proven that I had an average COP of 6 to 1. Our biggest COP on a favorable condition, which could be high winds with rain or direct sunshine, those were the most efficient conditions, was 12 to 1. I actually got 12 BTUs of heat out of a compressor with 1 BTU of electricity going into that compressor. So, hands down, it is the absolute all-time greatest, most efficient heat pump that's ever been built by anybody. And the interesting thing is I had no idea how refrigeration worked when I started. Now, I did that in Seattle, but that's going to be another story. I can do that some other time, all about the heat pump and how the heat pump was built. I'm going to talk about the thing that got me in prison. And we'll be picking up from there to explain prison. I ended up using my super solar heat pump to drive the world's most efficient hydraulic heat engine. This heat engine cycle, called the Fisher engine, I am the president of Fisher Heat Engines, Inc., and to be able to suck heat from my heat pump, from wind, snow, rain, sleet, hail, direct sunshine, any condition during the night or the daytime, to provide low temperature phase change and driving that Fisher engine cycle. The most efficient engine cycle that's ever been built in the history of mankind. That Fisher engine cycle could be used with my low temperature phase change heat pump to produce cost-free mechanical energy to make electricity at no operating cost at all. Free electricity. Not now, not today, not yesterday. Actually, about more than 30 years ago, about 35 years ago, I developed that technology. At no operating cost, electricity can be produced from energy we suck out of the air day or night. I thought that was a good thing, but with the huge, powerful fossil fuels energies ours, those self-interest groups, no good deed will go unpunished. I made a lot of money with my heat pump, a lot of money with my heat pump. I was worth $50 million within 1 year with my heat pump. That story I can tell you another time. That's in Seattle. And I sold kits to build my heat pump that had blueprints and diagrams and operating manuals and setup manuals and installation manuals, the whole nine yards, everything that I had done and worked and built. I sold kits for people to make my heat pump after the solar tax credits ended in 1985. Up until then, I'll do that story at some other time, working with Jimmy Carter on the energy crisis. I could have given him everything he needed to get with that. But anyway, that's another story. I'll tell it later. And I sold those to people who wanted to make their own super heat pump or build them and sell them to others. So I took my technology I owned exclusively myself, my patented technologies and all the different things with it, and I was just letting people go out and get instructions to how to manufacture it and install it and charge it and make it work. I didn't care. I was just giving that to them for the cost of a kit. Anyway, my super heat pump combined with a Fisher heat engine. And now, by the way, the Fisher heat engine cycle, for anybody who is astute in engine cycles, and I'm talking about something very, very, very unique, there is no engine cycle that works on gas in, liquid out. All engine cycles for car engines, truck engines, are gas in, gas out. I had the only heat cycle, engine cycle in the world that was gas in, and on the work cycle, it would actually compress the gas and turn it back into a liquid, and it would fall out the end of the cycle as a liquid. So it would go in as a gas, and it would fall out the bottom as a liquid, fully condensed. Tell me if you know anything about engines, if that's not the best engine cycle in the world. Anyway, it could produce free electricity because it was so efficient, and when you put that unit together with my low temperature phase change system that would take the energy out of the air, well, you just take the energy out of the air and make electricity. I did that, by the way, for the first time at the Old South Museum in Boston, where the American Revolution began. That's when I lit up my first light bulb from energy I took out of the room that Ben Franklin and John Adams had actually fomented the American Revolution from. I rented that museum, and I called it America's Declaration of Energy Independence. That was the show. First time I ever did it. Anyway, I'll tell you that story later on some other time, too. Anyway, I decided to give that technology to anyone who wanted it. They could get a kit to make their own super heat pump and buy a Fisher engine when they were ready and we started to produce them. And then they could set the two up and produce electricity at about a cost of about 2 cents a kilowatt hour over a cycle that would restore the cost of building the machine, et cetera, over a few years. About, I think it was a 5-year, 7-year payback. Then it was all free. So anyway, I want to read something to you out of a book called The Alternative. The book called The Alternative, I wrote, Dennis Lee, and it's just that, The Alternative. I know that Amazon sells them. I've sold tens of thousands of these, and then Amazon's reselling them, et cetera. It's quite a read. But everything I'm going to tell you tonight is in that book. So you can get a copy of that book, and then you can literally follow through with this, and you can read everything that I'm going to tell you tonight yourself. I'll usually quote, you know, what something came out of. Now, this was an ad that I ran in USA Today. So it's not like I'm hiding under a rock or something or trying to be private or quiet about this thing. I've got a heat pump that's well known to be the most efficient heat pump ever, and I've got thousands and thousands of happy customers that are out there doing amazing things to heat their houses, cool their houses, heat their swimming pools with energy they can suck out of any condition outside any time, and never had complaints. These were units that ran for 20 years. They didn't even change out the compressor for a 20-year period of time. That's how efficient it was. But now I decided that I was going to add that to the Fisher heat engine and make free electricity extracted from the air. So here's an ad that ran in USA Today nationwide. Free electricity. An American patriot discovered how to produce torque with a closed-loop Rankine cycle turbine powered by free energy taken from the air with an advanced heat pump, even in sub-zero weather. Our technology was recently given to every American citizen. I'm giving it to anybody who wants it. You can manufacture or sell the technology, including an air conditioning that operates for free, a water heater that can do 3,000 gallons of free hot water per day, and torque for a variety of purposes. Watch our videotapes for free. View our videotape presentation of the technology with full details on our fast-growing industry. Make huge profits while saving our planet from destruction. A refundable deposit or credit card will be required for the loan of the tapes. And you can watch the tape, and then you can get the kit to build one of these for yourself or build as many as you want. That ad ran in USA Today nationally. So I was in the position to go for it. So our facility where we manufactured that Fisher technology to, I mean, set it up and did all the testing and all the research and development, and we had our super heat pump in a walk-in freezer where people could come in and see a walk-in freezer at sub-zero temperatures and put their finger on a hot water coming out of that refrigeration unit hot enough to burn their hand. So, and did it at an efficiency that was greater than the average efficiency of other heat pumps. So we had a facility, research facility, and it got raided. It got raided without any warning, and armed deputies hauled off every mechanical device that we had in our of all of our research projects taken from our research lab, all of the blueprints and details of how to make every invention that we had from our safe and director's office. Supposedly we had not, here's why they had the raid. They had the raid because they were claiming that we had not filled out a form to register a civil code filing as a seller's assisted marketing plan in the state of California, even though we had no marketing plan at all. We just sold people plans and blueprints to make their own heat pump. Why did they need to remove all of our research projects to find out whether or not we had ever filled that form? Anyway, it was so heavy-handed that they left with 17 huge garbage bags of papers and a huge truck loaded with devices, all of our mechanical devices. They cleaned us out. They needed to know if we had filled out that form or not. Does that make any sense to you? It didn't make any sense to us. It didn't make any sense to our lawyers, but it didn't really matter. They did it anyway. Now, let me read another thing from the book, The Alternative. Here's another exhibit. There's a lot of exhibits in there I'm not going to be getting into. Workers file lawsuit, claim rights violation on raid. That's the heading. And I'll read parts. The employees filed the suits on their own behalf. Additional lawsuits were expected today, according to this news article, a company representative said. In an unusual move, the search warrant affidavits in the case were ordered sealed to the public by municipal court judge, and it gives his name. The investigation continues according to police who have refused to provide details about it. Wow, that must be one hell of a civil code registration form. Anyway, another part of it says desks were searched and the employees were harassed and verbally abused, the suits say. In comments to the Star Free Press in January, Lee said he was being harassed for providing what he said was a solution to the world's energy and pollution problems. Like I said, no good deed goes unpunished. After the raid, our employees sued the Sheriff's Department. 16 lawsuits were filed in total against the Sheriff's Office for the raid that they did and the way that they did it. I mean, it was mean-spirited, heavy-handed. They all were armed, and there was a dozen of them. over not filling out a seller's assisted marketing plan registration. Anyway, our facility was raided and armed deputies carried off all our mechanical devices. Supposedly, we had not registered a civil suit filing, a civil code filing as a seller's assisted marketing plan, even though we didn't have a marketing plan. We didn't give them any assistance beyond just buying all the stuff to build their own product, and they could build it or not build it or throw it away or put it on a shelf or build as many of them as they want and go ahead and make all the money from it. There was no continued relationship with us at all. By the way, that does not qualify as a seller's assisted marketing plan in the state of California or anywhere else. Anyway, let me keep going. It was so heavy-handed, they left with 17 bags of papers, got all of our stuff, and we had lawsuits filled out against them. There had been less than a dozen claims of violating that civil code over the entire 8-year period of time that it was in existence, and only one case that ever went to court, which was overturned in the 12-year history of the civil code. I'm sorry, it's 8 cases out of 12 years. Let me read the next exhibit, Exhibit 2E. This is a warning letter sent to people by the Attorney General's office. The AG's office usually sends a warning letter to people suspected of operating an unregistered seller's assisted marketing plan. In my case, there was absolutely no warning whatsoever. Our warning was them showing up with guns, pulling people out into the parking lot, pushing people around, and taking everything we had in our research facility. Everything. Not much to do with a seller's assisted marketing plan, but there you go. Anyway, let me keep going. This harassment did not stop me, and I rebuilt the energy device because they wouldn't give me mine back and was going to demonstrate it at a meeting room with hundreds of people at the LA airport, and they arrested me at that start of the meeting with a dozen deputies again. They pulled me out of the room and then quietly took all the people out row by row until they cleared the entire room and then took the machines and technology I had there. Anyway, they came and arrested me at the start of the meeting and said, there's not going to be a meeting tonight. We're taking this guy down because he's a fraud. So they had called our complete list of kit buyers when they came and raided our facility, everybody who ever bought a kit from me, and none of them had ever complained, but they had intimidated 4 of the people. Some people are weak enough. We'd never had a complaint. Nobody ever said this wasn't good. They didn't think they got what they paid for. If they did, there was one guy, and we gave him his money back and said, okay, if you don't want it, if you don't think it has value, then fine, we'll take it back. So there were never any complaints, ever. And they arrested me at the start of the meeting. They had called our list of kit buyers and got 4 of them to say that they didn't know that it was a seller's assisted marketing plan and that we had not offered them the registration form that we were supposed to have filled out for the seller's assisted marketing plan. It says that you have to give them the knowledge that this is a seller's assisted marketing plan. By the way, my lawyer and accountant both checked that out as one of the statutes and both said we didn't have to fill it out. So to request their money back after they were told. So when they were told, then they said, well, would you like to have your money back? Yeah, if he gave us our money back, that'd be great. So those 4 people came to a total of $20,000 in total. Now, remember this, because I'm going to tell you something pretty interesting now. They shut down the show and arrested me for defrauding those 4 people out of their $20,000. Because I didn't file the form of a seller's assisted marketing plan, evidently, or whatever. And me and axe murderers, if you're an axe murderer, you could be treated the way I was. got a bail of $1 million. My bail was $1 million. So I had a bail of $1 million for supposedly defrauding four people out of $20,000 and not filling out a civil code form, a civil code violation. But I think we all can easily imagine why I was under the gun, because I was about to tell everybody and to get everybody to start getting involved in being able to produce their own free energy. So anyway, they claimed I was telling people that we believe we could produce free electricity, so we had criminal charges brought against me as well. So I was arrested on criminal charges. How dare me think that I could make free energy? We posted the bail, the $1 million bail, and before I could leave, they filed a motion to change it to no bail. Can you believe that? Judge sets the bail $1 million. You come, put all the stuff together, get it together for the $1 million bail. You're supposed to be leaving. You're thinking you're called out of the jail, out of the prison. No, if that was a jail, that you're called out of the jail, to go leave, to you're out on bail. And instead they haul me into court and say, they filed a motion to change it from $1 million bail to no bail. And the judge went along and said, okay, no bail. And so even though I posted $1 million bail for a $20,000 offense, I still couldn't leave because now it was changed to no bail. Now, by the way, this is all true. You can get all this in that book, The Alternative. This is all very proven in there. Wow, that civil code misdemeanor was evidently pretty dangerous, huh? Now, let me read you an exhibit from that book. This is an actual exhibit. This is in California, and this is actually the motion for my bail to be set at $1 million. And it says that what I was in there for, theft by false pretense, because I said I could do something that I obviously couldn't do, and my seller's assisted marketing plan violation, they say, quote unquote, the bail of $5,000 set forth in the schedule of bail is insufficient to secure defendant's appearance. So they're saying normally the bail is $5,000, what I've been accused of. But in my case, they wanted to change it to request a bail to be set in the amount of $1 million. That's pretty interesting, don't you think? But you got to remember now, I was actually taking on the oil companies, the electric companies, the energy companies, and I actually did have a technology that was already proven as an energy source, and I had a engine cycle that we had proven in our lab, in our research lab, but had not been accepted by the world. But I definitely had every right in the world to believe that my heat pump, which was a product that was well worth its what anybody would pay to be able to make it in and of itself, could actually produce energy for free, and I was about to prove it. Well, that's the good deed that would not go unpunished. So anyway, I was in a California jail for an entire year awaiting trial because I was not allowed to be out on any bail whatsoever until they destroyed my company. That was the goal. Tear the company apart, tear my research apart. Okay, that's what they do. It's just part of the program. I was awaiting trial, and that story is a very long story. I'm not going to get into that tonight, but there was a lot of stuff that went on during that period of time. Anyway, we have affidavits from people, lots of affidavits from people. You'll hear about more about how many. We had affidavits from people who were threatened not to testify on our behalf, and our director of research, which was a retired genius from the Department of Defense, who literally developed the hull design of the modern-day submarine, to give you an idea what kind of people I had working with me in my research facility, a man who actually stopped the bombing of the Ho Chi Minh Trail that eliminated, that developed a technology that would eliminate the need to bomb on that trail. I can't get into that. It's top secret. But my research retired genius from the Department of Defense who helped build the device was told to leave the state, to go out of his house because they knew that I would subpoena him, and leave the state, and if he ever came back, they would kill his entire family and burn his house to the ground. We have an affidavit from him. He actually testified eventually in a court of law that that's exactly what happened with him. He actually, at our hearing to dismiss the case, came back and did testify to all of that. That was a man who exercised a tremendous amount of courage. I mean, it's an amazing thing. Him and a few other people are the reason why I was even brought out, I ever got up out of that case. They were wanting to put me in prison for 40 years. The deal that they offered my attorney was, well, if you'll plead guilty to all of it, we'll stop at 40 years. 40 years. That's a long way from one. Anyway, I'll keep going with the story. It took hours just to bore Dyer this expert's credentials. Also, my chief research engineer, the man who actually built the technology for Frank Lloyd Wright so that the Space Needle could rotate on a platform using a 2-horsepower motor. Believe it or not, that's what makes that go around. My man's the man who did that. Also, my chief research engineer was the superintendent that built the Boeing 707 manufacturing plant. And also, he built several power plants or supervised building several power plants. And he is an incredible human being. He's dead now, but an incredible human being. And he said, I think I know, when he testified in court to the judges, I think I know, Judge, how electricity works, because I built most of the power plants, or had something to do with building most of the power plants in the Pacific Northwest. He was my chief research engineer. Anyway, he did come to court and he did testify. And it's interesting because he actually came to court as a witness for the state. He was there to testify against me. And he came in and he set them up like you can't believe, and he tore them apart. When he came to court, they were all saying that I couldn't make electricity and energy and all the different things, and didn't have anybody that could testify that I could or would or whatever. And anyway, they had threatened them all that they couldn't testify. He actually got the chance to come back and testify because he wanted to testify for the state. So the state brought him back because he said, I kept trying to tell Mr. Lee, you keep saying you can make free electricity, but by God, you can't make free electricity. And I can prove in court he cannot make free electricity. So the district attorney paid his trip from Texas. He had run away to Texas, and then he finally decided he wanted to come and go to court. Paid his fee from Texas to come and testify. And he did indeed come to testify because they're like, hey, he's going to actually make our case, not Lee's case. So when he came to testify, and by the way, this is a news article you'll find in that book. This news article is Mr. Stan Zambrusky's picture in it. And I'm just going to read some of this to you. What crime is Lee accused of committing? The man who was in charge of the engineering team that brought the 707 and other large commercial jet airliners into being for Boeing Aircraft testified that Lee has been telling the truth about his invention. Stan Zambrusky, who worked for Lee until Deputy Sheriff Bruce McDowell, until the deputy sheriff kicked in the door to his office at Lee's company and stole his drawings, files, and prototype, testified under questioning from Lee's attorney. I'll tell you the story in a minute. More power out than it takes to run. The smiling, confident, and friendly scientist testified that he is an electrical engineer and that he is certainly is telling the truth when he says the heat pump he sells is capable of producing more electricity than it takes to run it. Centering upon its concern that Lee was lying about his ability to produce free electricity, the district attorney, with the help of the sheriff's department and other deputies, put together a long list of charges against Lee. Electrical engineer Stan Zembruski, the man who headed the team of engineering for Boeing and built the Boeing 707, testified Friday in Ventura County Court that the heat pump causing Dennis Lee to be prosecuted for fraud will do everything Lee says it will do. Zembruski also testified that the DA investigator lied repeatedly in a report that he wrote about Zembruski. The engineer originally flown to Ventura from Washington State by the district attorney gave testimony that devastated the DA's case against Lee. Well, it was interesting because when Stan got on the witness stand, he was their witness, so they interviewed him first. And he said, "Your Honor, I kept trying to tell Mr. Lee, you can't tell people you can make free electricity because the fact of the matter is he cannot make free electricity." And the district attorney and the prosecutor were like all smiles and excited because a man of his caliber, after they voir dired all his credentials, was literally there to testify that I couldn't do anything. And then he said, "I kept telling him, stop telling people that. It's a lie. It's not the truth." So the judge was all excited, everybody was all excited, and then my lawyer came and cross-examined him. And I said to my lawyer, I just said, "Don't worry about it. Just ask him why he says that," because I knew exactly what he was doing. So my lawyer said, "Well, could you explain to me, you said that Mr. Lee was lying about the heat pump and about the energy technology, and that it could make free electricity, and you kept trying to tell him to stop lying to people and telling them that it could make free electricity because it can't. Could you elaborate on that?" And he said, "Well, yes, this is exactly what I kept telling Dennis Lee, right there, that man right there. I kept telling him, you can't tell them this makes free electricity. You can't. Because in order for you to do this, you have to manufacture that product. So you have to make the heat pump, you have to make the heat engine, you have to put the two together, you have to install the whole thing, and that costs money to do that. Sure, you could run it for free. It doesn't cost any money at all to run it. You don't need any oil, you don't need any electricity, you don't need any outside energy source to do it. Yes, it could run absolutely at no cost whatsoever, but by God, you have to build that machine, and that's not free." I couldn't resist laughing in court. When the judge heard that, and the judge loved him as a witness, and the judge was like really excited that the DA had got some real strong evidence that we couldn't do anything, that judge was like, he was livid. He looked like he had swallowed a snake. And so he really did devastate their case. Anyway, we also had the guy from the Department of Defense who did testify that the sheriff had told him that if he didn't leave the state and run away and not be a witness for me, then they would kill his family and burn his house to the ground. He came back actually as a surprise guest of my attorney, brought him in. And they didn't have time to not have him come in. And he sat there and he said, "You know something? You want to shoot me here? You want to take me out back and shoot me? I'm tired of running from you people." That actually happened in a court of law in Ventura County, California. And in that court of law, I proved in that hearing, a prosecutorial hearing to dismiss the case, I proved that I could make electricity absolutely free at no operating cost at all. I proved that in a court of law in 1990. How long ago is that? 20 years ago. Anyway, it was kind of a interesting thing, but the judge had heard enough. We provided evidence in a court of law in California that we could make free electricity, and the judge took us all back. His hammer hit the ground, hit the table, and he took us all back into his chambers. And he said, Mr. Lee, we are dismissing all the criminal charges against you today. So the charges that were supposed to put me in prison for 40 years were dismissed that day at a hearing for prosecutorial misconduct. The judge dismissed the case after I proved in a court of law we could make electricity for free. Now, it's kind of interesting because not one newspaper anywhere of any size, any major newspaper at all, has ever been willing to print that story. None of them. But obviously it's true. All of the bail was dismissed against me. I was no longer on $1 million bail. And the judge dismissed the criminal case. Anyway, let me read another thing to you here, another exhibit, so you can kind of see this. This is a copy of the press release approved by my lawyer, who is a big-time lawyer who won the biggest case against the IRS in United States history. That was the man who I talked into defending me for $10,000. Yeah, he actually did. Now, this is his press release. Mr. Lee of Ventura County, California, recently petitioned the federal district court in Los Angeles to have Ventura County Sheriff's Office deputies and the assistant district attorney prosecuted on criminal charges for conspiracy to violate the civil rights of an American citizen under cover of law and for criminal syndicalism under California Criminal Code 1-400, I think. Lee is charged with 7 counts of fraud, having already been dismissed, and counts of Seller's Assisted Marketing Plan Act, an obscure statute requiring registration or persons selling goods or services priced anywhere between $500 and $50,000 to be utilized in starting a new business. In the 12 years of this law's existence, there is only one reported case that reversed, and that conviction was reversed. That's it. In all of that time, they've had one conviction, and it was reversed on appeal. Boy, this is a dangerous thing. So Dennis Lee's nationally known attorney, Bill Cohan, who has defended American citizens in more than 50 federal districts throughout the United States, only 3 days of testimony have been heard, with at least 2 more to go. To those 3 days, intimidation, conspiring to put the company promoting Lee's energy devices out of business, scaring supporters to prevent posting Lee's $1 million bail. The bail schedule called for early on $5,000, and blatantly threatening witnesses not to testify for the defendant. Some obviously frightened people have overcome their fear and and taken the stand, testifying in detail to the threats and deception. Attorney Cohen is now persuaded to a moral certainty that there is a conspiracy to violate Lee's rights. As recently as April 9th, an investigator for the DA's office attempted to intimidate a material defense witness by claiming that the judge told the prosecutor that, don't worry, we will not dismiss the case no matter what they do. Lee is the apparent victim of corrupt manipulation of law enforcement as an unfair business practice because his efforts to promote energy independence for the world are proving too effective for vested interest in the energy business. That was written by my attorney in a motion for to bring charges against them for gross prosecutorial misconduct. And basically, the judge decided it was good enough that I had been let go. So we didn't need to go any further than that. Just letting me go solved the problem. For them, maybe. It sure as heck didn't solve the problem for me. Anyway, continuing on, when God is defending you, it is not shooting fish in a barrel. I have it coming against me. They thought, boy, we got this guy shooting fish in a barrel. We got him locked up. He can't get out. We can tear his business apart, which they did. And he won't be able to do anything about any of this or even have anybody worth anything defend him. That didn't work out. I've never had anyone get close to a trial since. I mean, that's the only time I've gotten close to a trial in my entire life. Out of all the harassment that I've received, if you hang in with me and I tell you about all of it, I have had cases against brought against me by 50% of all the attorney generals in the entire United States of America, and they have never proven I've done anything wrong, ever. Ever, not once. From that trial right there, that time of that hearing, pre-trial, they've never gotten close to being that close to me again, ever. Because it wasn't a good experience for them. Let me tell you something. They don't want to go to court with me. They do not want to do that. It's always, let's make a deal, and that's how it goes. They don't want me near a trial. The judge dismissed all the criminal charges under false pretense, theft under false pretenses, and made a deal. We could settle the civil code violation by me just admitting that I didn't fill out the form, which I had admitted three times in open court. No, judge, I did not fill out the seller's assisted marketing form ever, did not fill it out, did not think I had to fill it out. Had a lawyer review it, and he didn't think I had to fill it out. He's ready to testify. Had an accountant review it, he didn't think I had to fill it out. He's ready to testify. Never, ever, ever filled out that form. So if I was required to fill out the form, I violated that code. I said that in open court. No problem. I tell the truth. So I said we could settle the civil code violation, he said, by me just admitting that I didn't fill out the form, and then let the appeals courts, all of the three appeals courts, all rule on whether or not I was required to. See, my lawyer and my opinion was we weren't required to fill it out, so why would we have filled it out? The judge was like, well, I think you were required to fill it out, so that's why you needed to fill it out. The prosecutor was the same thing. So the judge said, hey, I can solve all of this, and we can just get this done. And we're dismissing the case because he did not want to have a trial in his court, me proving free electricity beyond any doubt with all of those people and all of those witnesses watching on. He didn't want that. So we could settle the civil code by me just admitting that I didn't fill out the form, and then we would make a deal that we could take it to the appellate courts. I would be free during the whole time that the appellate courts were ruling on all of it, on whether or not I was required to. And the deal was this. If they all agreed with the judge that I was required to fill out the form, then I was guilty. So it goes to three appellate courts. All of those appellate courts say, yes, indeed, he was required to fill out the form. Okay, we go to the next appellate court. Yes, indeed, he was required to fill out the form. Okay, we then go to the Supreme Court of the United States. They rule, yes, indeed, he was supposed to fill out the form. I'm now guilty. And then I would be guilty, and then we could come back, and he would give me probation. That was the deal. If any one of those three appellate courts ruled that I did not have a seller's assisted marketing plan, and I was not required to fill out that form, then I was a free man. Now, that was a pretty good deal, really. It's all over with. All the charges have been dropped against me. I don't have to do 40 years in prison. I don't have any time in prison. I would come back and get probation anyway. And if any one of those courts said I didn't have to fill out the form, I was a free man, and if all three of those courts said I did have to fill it out, I was convicted. Why would I not do that? Of course I would do that. Now, the case was over on 11/27/1991. California appellate and supreme courts and the appeal to both the appellate and the Supreme Court of the state of California from 11/27/91 was ended on March 4, 1992. 11/27 is November 27, so that had the month of December, and then we had February, and then we got a little piece of March. Less than 3 months, I exhausted all the appellate remedies in the entire state of California in a 3-month period of time. Boy, you want to talk about swift justice. I was in jail for a year waiting for a trial without bail. Then all this stuff happened and the trial was over and everything was dismissed. And now I went through the entire appellate system of the state of California in less than 3 months. Is something wrong with this here? With anybody that understands this? They were over within less than 3 months, and state appeals were, and in the state appeals, both courts were required to rule, according to my plea bargain, were required to rule, and they violated my plea bargain because both courts refused to rule. We're not going to rule. We don't have to rule. Goes to the Supreme Court in California. Make those people rule. The deal was they had to rule. Well, we're not only not going to make them rule, we're not going to rule either. We refuse to rule. That was it. Done with that in 3 months. Now, so then the Supreme Court of the United States was up to bat. They did something that they have never done. Get a copy of the book. They have done something, it's well, all explained in there, they have never done in the history of the United States Supreme Court, before me and after me. I am a one of a kind with the United States Supreme Court. Only time it ever happened. Pretty interesting. Because the Supreme Court did something it never does. Rather than ruling in my favor, when 3 months went by from the time that I filed our motion with the Supreme Court, I used a lawyer that critiques the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C., a man named Fine. He said this had never been done before in U.S. history. He critiques the Supreme Court. And he said, I don't know what's going on, but they got 20 days to reply to your appeal, and they haven't replied. A month went by, 2 months went by, 3 months went by. He says, I'm afraid to ask him. He says, it's never happened before. You have to win. I don't understand how you could not win now. They don't even have the ability or the right to issue an objection to your appeal, to your suit. 3 months after the state of California did not send any reply to my thing, and they had definitely gotten it, the United States Supreme Court ordered the state of California to object to my petition. Never happened ever to anybody before. I'm the one person in U.S. history that has happened to. Would you say they were a little bit upset and trying to make sure the oil companies didn't, that they weren't the guy that let me go for the oil companies. So California just refused to do it, so the Supreme Court could let me go, and it wasn't them that did it. That's why they did that. They were ordered by the Supreme Court to disagree, so they offered a short little one-pager that says, we disagree with Mr. Lee and his attorney, and we think that they're taking things out of context. He didn't offer any evidence of anything we were taking out of context. And so the U.S. Supreme Court said, well, then obviously there is one opinion that he did have to do this, and there's another opinion that he's taking that out of context, and so there's a disagreement between the state of California and Mr. Lee. Yeah, one that you caused to happen by ordering them to disagree. And they said, so this is the Supreme Court of the United States, and we would have to have a hearing and a trial in order to determine this, and we just can't take our time to settle a simple civil code violation in the state of California. So the Supreme Court decided not to take it on. Now, you have to ask yourself, have they lived up to the bargain that they made with me that if all three courts rule that I did have to fill out the form, I'm guilty? And if any one of the courts rule that I didn't have to fill out the form, I'm free. I'm an innocent man. Well, how do you do it whenever not one of the three courts, in violation of the agreement, the plea bargain agreement, even was willing to fill out the case, that was willing to make anything on this at all? How do you do that? But that's exactly what did indeed happen. No court ruled against me. No court ruled for me. They just all refused to rule at all. Well, was I convicted? Was I innocent? See, here's what happens when you have a plea bargain and something is supposed to happen to settle the case, and it doesn't happen. Nobody ruled for, nobody ruled against, and they were all three supposed to rule, and none of the three ruled. All three appellate courts in the United States, none of them ruled. Well, actually, the Supreme Court came closest to ruling. They just said, gee, we're not ruling against, we're not ruling in favor. We just don't have our time to go do settle some stupid little civil code violation in the state of California. So did that mean I was innocent, or did that mean I was guilty? What did it mean? So I filed for my right to withdraw my plea and go to court. That's what happens. What happens when you have a plea and you aren't given what the plea was and what you bargained for, and in open court, by the way, then you're supposed to be able to withdraw your plea and have a trial. I was perfectly happy to go back to the state of California and defend myself in a court of law with attorneys that could show that I was not required to fill out the seller's assisted marketing plan. We didn't have a marketing plan. We didn't have any continued relationship with the parties at all. It's here. Here's this material. Here's the information. Here's all the things of how to do it. It's yours. You bought it. Go do it. That was it. That's not a marketing plan. So I said, I can withdraw my plea. So I filed a motion to withdraw my plea and go to court. Here was the response of a whole new judge. Lo and behold, the other judge had just gotten promoted to the appeals court, and he was no longer in the position, so it had to be another judge that I went before. Now, I'm going to read from the court transcript of the other judge when I went back after having not gotten what I had been promised as a plea bargain. And here's what I said. Number one, Your Honor, I'd like to present evidence to you that I was not granted what I plea bargained for in the form of what was going to happen on the appeals. What we had agreed to did not take place, so therefore I would like to present argument to the court and to have the opportunity to argue that that did not take place, and therefore we should decide this issue, especially on the matter of probation. If you have heard my argument, I think you'd understand what my position is, and I can summarize it for you if that would be helpful. Now, this is me on court on my motion to withdraw my plea. Here's what the judge actually said. I don't think it would be helpful. I said, anyway, my belief was that I did not have what was promised and that therefore I should have a right to withdraw my plea or be given what was promised. To which the judge said, in my view, the judge in your case has pronounced sentence. In my view, the judge, at least as far as I can tell from the file, stayed the imposition of the sentence pending exhaustion of appeals. These appeals have been exhausted. So he said further, I see no reason why remand to prison should not go forward. So let's do that. And I said to him, how can you do that? And he said, oh, okay, well, you probably don't understand how it's done. What you do, Mr. Lee, is you go over there where that sheriff is with the gun on his hip. You go over to him standing by that door. He then puts you in handcuffs and takes you through that door, and you're in prison. Let's try it. And I was in prison. I was in prison for a 14-month period of time. I'd already served time in jail, had counted on the prison term. And so I was there for a 14-month period of time, and I was released from prison. Now, I don't know if that's something I was supposed to be ashamed of, but if it's something I was supposed to be ashamed of, I'm not ashamed of it. I wasn't ashamed of it then. I'm not ashamed of it now. You can read the book that I wrote about this with all the evidence on it, and you can see if you think I should have been ashamed of that, or I should be ashamed of it now. It's the one time in my entire life I've ever stepped foot in a prison, and I was in that prison for 14 months. And I had a lot of things happen with me. A lot of things happened. So I was in prison. I did not pass go. I did not collect $200 until later after 14 months had passed. In my only time ever in prison, I had a major attempt on my life in prison. I should be dead. They tried to kill me in prison, and I'll tell you that story also. My wife saved my life. And a lot of people found Jesus while I was in there. Some pretty entertaining stories I can tell you about prison. So if you're interested in talking about prison, we can talk about that as well. By the way, the day I was released, I went directly across the road to a telephone booth, and I recorded a hotline announcing my determination to make free electricity for America. It was my way of telling them their attempt to tell me that they had the power to just throw me in prison without any conviction had worked. But I called the show, Chucky is back. And I said, I'm out, and I am going to do everything in my power to produce free energy and to set America free from these cowards. They were guilty. I was not guilty. They were convicted, and their punishment was decades of struggling, trying to stop me. And believe me, from 1990 on, all of the stuff that they did to try to stop me did not work out so hotsy-totsy, even though half of all the attorney generals in America brought suits and all kinds of others. They never charged me with crime. It was always lawsuits and that type of thing, because if they charged me with a crime, I got rights. If they charged me with lawsuits, I have no rights. I have no rights. They're just trying to take my money from me. So I had all kinds of suits for half the United States attorney generals in the United States. I went on 7 national energy tours nationwide, getting on stage and telling the truth about energy, demonstrating technologies. You're not going to believe all the stories that I can tell you of that, all the full-page newspaper ads that ran across America announcing my tours And I made every single show at every single tour across the United States of America in every state of the United States, doing all the things that I did. With everybody trying to stop me, they didn't stop me from doing one single solitary show in seven national tours. And I mean, I did shows with thousands of people in the audience, and I did shows with tens of thousands of people in the audience in stadiums. And I did indeed go across. If you want to hear the stories, I'll be happy to tell you the stories of tours and why the tours and what I proved at each of the tours. It got way more difficult for them to stop me as time went by. So they had to put up with all of that because of what they had done to me. I built my own Make America Great Again campaign. I was standing for a thing that we used to have in America that we call free enterprise. That was my thing. My thing was we need to have free enterprise in America. And I achieved it. I had the technology. I know at least 8 ways to make free electricity, while the colleges only know 3. Universities know 3. Dennis Lee knows 8. Dennis Lee offered to debate university professors that said he didn't know anything about physics in their own universities, and I would pay the university $35,000 in cash if their debater, their head of the physics department, would just show up on the stage to meet me. He didn't even have to win. Even if the audience concluded that he had lost handily, they still would get the $35,000. I had college professors critiquing me on Good Morning America and other shows, saying that I don't know anything about physics, while I was on tours demonstrating technologies that anyone was allowed to come up on stage, bring their own instruments, and measure the input and the output of the devices. And those college professors would say, don't go to the show. He doesn't know anything about this. He doesn't understand the laws of physics, and he cannot do what he said he could do. Well, I still had half the shows in America, in half the states of America to go, and I was saying, well, why doesn't he just come up on stage then at one of my shows, since everybody's entitled to come on stage and measure it? Why doesn't this professor bring his devices, his instruments, and come up on stage and measure it for himself? The only reason they didn't do it is because they all damn well knew it worked. They all did. You don't want to come up on stage, have 16, 70 people measuring this thing, and you're the one guy that says it doesn't work. Doesn't work too good that way. Anyway, I set up my chance to revive free enterprise in America and build our country and make our country great again, because we haven't had free enterprise in this country for a long, long, long time. And the way it works right now is you buy the judges, you buy the universities, you buy the media. By the way, most of the media is owned by the major corporations in America. And you buy the universities so that they will not say, well, yeah, actually, we've been keeping you guys away from the real knowledge of physics for years and years and years. You buy that if you're rich enough, and then no one can compete with you. If they do, they're going to go through all of this or hitmen or whatever, but God was not going to let them knock me off. No way in the world would God let that happen. Every time I left on a national tour, I always kissed my babies goodbye, kissed my wife goodbye, wrote my will, made doggone sure that everything was prepared for my family when I was gone, because I never, for the first 3 tours that I did, I never expected to survive. I did not think I was going to be coming back at any one of the shows that I ever did. Didn't. But guess what? I did come back. Every single show, I made it back. Then I finally got to the place where I said, okay, so God's just not going to let these guys do this to me. So that's it. Anyway, I set up to revive free enterprise in America, and I was fully prepared to do it, but the people had to give me their support. So I was going to change your country But I demanded that the people themselves at least have enough courage to come down and put their butt in a chair in a stadium show that I would pay for, and I would come in with a flatbed trailer with my technology. We would turn it on and light the lights in the stadium from energy we're sucking out of the air in that place. And all I needed was for those seats to be filled with 50,000, 70,000 onlookers so that the cowards and the people in this country that don't believe in free enterprise, that don't fight fair, that don't do anything in a right manner, would not be able to say it didn't work, because there'd be 70,000 witnesses watching it work, with people all over the stages measuring it. And I was even bringing one, planned to bring one of them, that the guys had said, we're just going to shut it down and you can't test it tonight because you're not a testing facility. I was going to give them one to take to their testing facility and go test while we lit the lights. But I couldn't get enough people to fill the stadiums I was paying for in order to have that happen, even though I said to churches across the United States of America, you want to hear that story? I'll tell you about churches in the United States of America, because I went to probably a good 60% of all the churches around there. With all of my people that were working with me, all my supporters, we went to 10,000, more than 10,000 churches, church groups, big major church institutions. And I just said, look, I get half of all the money from making free electricity. We're going to put a unit that makes free electricity on the lawns of people in America, and people in America can now have that unit on their lawn. And they're tied into that unit, they can have their energy first. So it's going to, on a priority, serve their needs, light their lights, run their motors, and supply their energy first. And then all the excess energy is going to go back over the electric utilities grid and go to the electric power companies in America to shut them down. No more fossil fuels, no more gas, no more coal. All there was power coming through the grid system back from the houses, powering that facility that could send the power into commercial users and commercial buildings. The houses would be done for free because they had a unit on their lawn, and we would send the power into the electric utility companies. The guy who had a unit on their house would not get any money from any power we sold to the electric companies. That was all ours. But he would get his power for free because he had the unit on his lawn. And here's what he had to do to get the unit on his lawn. Show up at a football stadium. That was it. Now, the electric utility company, churches, could easily get all of those seats filled in the stadiums because I said to them, you know something? I'm a man of God. I don't care about money. It's not my big goal in life to make a bunch of money. You can't take it with you anyway. What I want to do is I want to do God's work. So here's what I offered all the churches in the United States of America. You put the people in the stadium, put their butts in the seats. You tell your people to go to the stadium and fill those seats. You sign them all up, get them tickets, and have them commit to filling up one of the seats. When we fill the stadium, I'll do all the stadiums. In every state of the United States, I'll do the shows. Then when I do those shows, the media will have to cover it. They can't do what the media does all the time and cover whatever the hell their handlers tell them they want them to cover. They don't cover news. They make news. All the things Trump is saying about the media is absolutely 100% correct. I call them out at every show that I get. I did the same thing Trump does. I'm pointing at all of them and say, see these sick people back here? They're not going to do anything favorable with anything we're going to do tonight. We're going to show you all kinds of things. They're not going to even film it because they're a bunch of liars. I was calling them out in almost every tour I ever gave. If any of you guys ever attended a tour, you know what I'm saying is right. I was doing exactly what Donald Trump is doing right now because they're a bunch of liars. That's what they are. So I was saying, look, you guys bring your people in your church. I mean, National, Baptist, et cetera, major churches. We're going to all those guys at the top echelon And you know what? They wouldn't do this. Why? Because I had a problem with having been in prison, and they're scared that maybe what if I don't actually do this? I said, look, your people will get a free energy machine on their home because they put a butt in the seat. Your church will get its free energy from this as well. And half of all the money that we make selling electricity is going to my supporters. They didn't own me. I didn't use any of their money. I used my own money to do all of this. Everything I did with my own money, selling my own technologies and raising capital, not anything like free electricity. I never sold a free electricity machine in my life. But I raised my own money. I'm going to get the stadiums. I'm going to do all of this stuff. And the church can have my half of the money. I would have provided more money to the churches in America than they would need to be standing up to all the things that are going on today. There's no reason why we're killing babies left and right. There's no reason why we're doing 90% of the things against God that we're doing today. There's no reason. The church had plenty of money to defend the kingdom of God and the word of God. I offered to give them all the money I would make the churches can have. Just put your parishioners in these meetings. Fill the meetings. I don't think that was me asking too much for them, but I can tell you right now, the way they stop people like me from making energy technologies is they wait until I'm actually putting a free electricity machine on the market or demonstrating it. They come in, grab that technology, bring it off to some research lab somewhere, get a university to test it and say it doesn't work. And then they put you in prison. Do you know they can do that to you even if you didn't sell a machine? They can. Because you claimed that it would work. They took it to some university that says, no, it didn't work. If they say it didn't work, they get a whole new wing in the university and all kinds of money. If they say it did work, they get dead. So see, I can't do that, but I can put 70,000 people in seats in a stadium and have all kinds of people coming down and measuring the input and the output on devices and bring technologies in there. If you want me to tell you about this, I'll be telling you about this in future discussions, and you're going to be shocked by the technologies that I had. Unbelievable. Your world wouldn't even be the same world with the technologies that God had revealed to me. You wouldn't even be living in the same world. You can get videos and audio tapes of some of these technologies, not out there on the internet, because God forbid anybody would actually put anything out there that's real. But I got them. I got tons of things like that. You guys decide later on as I do shows, you want to get some of the exhibits and get some of the technology shows and copies of shows that I did. I can do that. I got all of that. I got everything. I got all the energy technology that I ever had. I own it. I've got it right now. I own it all. I have the working models of things. I do. I've been keeping them safe this whole time. So I set up to survive free enterprise in America, to revive it. And I was fully prepared to do it, but the people had to give me their support. Not their money. Their faith, or they could select Obama. That was the challenge. Okay, you got a guy running for president. He's going to come in here, and you're going to take what he's got behind door number two, or you're going to support me in these shows, and you're going to give me the ability to come in here and change everything to be what it needs to be and build America and make America great again. So you could have the world I could bring, or you could have the world Obama could bring. I believe they made the wrong choice, but I am not responsible for other people's choices. There was only one person involved with me that didn't care whether we made a free electricity machine or not. That was me. I didn't care. It wasn't about making a free electricity machine. It wasn't about being famous because you're the guy who made the free electricity machine. Who cares? That's just ridiculous and stupid anyway. I was there to actually make the change. if the people wanted it. But if the people don't want it enough, the churches didn't show up. Why? Because they were afraid they would lose the 501c3. The government would get mad at them for doing that, and then they would lose their tax status. It's sad. It's really sad. I wish I had another report I could give anybody, but I can't. I believe they made the wrong choice, but I'm not responsible for their choice. I'm responsible for my choice. If I know what I can do and I don't do it, then I have a responsibility to God for that. Now we're in the position to save them from their bad choice again. If you want me to continue on with my saga, then I'll give you hundreds of hours of these stories on and on and on and on with plenty of evidence, because I got everything I've ever had. I've got it all. I'll do another one next week if you want me to do another one. I think maybe I could do one on the heat pump first, so we could get you back to where that preceded this other thing. And I could do a show on that and the first energy show in the place where the Old South Museum, where the American Revolution began. Or maybe how this whole walk with God began, if you're interested in that. So it's your choice. You guys choose. I put this one in the can. Somebody wanted to know why I had two names. Now you know why I have two names. And if you wanted to know why I was in prison and about my prison thing, I thought, well, those are the two most dynamic that would bother most people. Now we've got the only time I've ever been in prison out of the way. Now you know what really happened there. And if you want proof of it, then you get that book, The Alternative, from Amazon. I don't make anything from that. And you get the proof. Or I can send you articles. And I'm going to be continuing every time I do one of these, reading articles and things that will prove everything that I'm saying. Some things you'll be able to go down and get in your library. I'll give you the dates and the time that things happen. You can go read them for yourself. Anyway, whatever topic, maybe some other topic, if you guys will send me your suggestion, you know how to get hold of me, you get hold of me. And send me your suggestion for next week. I'll do another program, and I'll keep doing a new one every week until you guys don't, none of you guys want to hear it anymore. No problem. But if you just say, well, shoot, I don't have a hard time believing in you, because right now, from the thing that guy did, and I think we all need to be praying for him, because you read the meanness and the mofo stuff and the terrible things that he is out there. Obviously, he is bitter. He's mean. And I think he's got a demon. And I think that anybody that prays should be praying for this man. This guy is a sad case. And I hope that he can get cured from that, that he can get exercised or whatever he needs to get past all of that stuff. But he's probably listening in on this, because evidently there's somebody from your group that he's getting information from, because he knew everything that we were doing. So maybe somebody's given him access to all of the codes and all of the different things that we're doing. Allison's talking about changing the codes again, and then maybe somebody just give them to him again. But all you're going to do with him is just hurt him. And basically what we need to do is we need to pray for him. It isn't about him. I think actually what somebody means for evil actually turns into good if you're following God anyway. But I'll keep doing these, and maybe he'll even listen to some of these things, and maybe he'll realize how ridiculous his little activity out there is. It's disruptive, but it's not very effective. I haven't had one negative response from anybody, any of the team leaders, any of the workers, any of the people, any of the agents. I sent all this information to everybody, and somebody would be thinking, well, why did you do that? Because, hey, if somebody's doing stuff like that, then they have a right to know what the truth is. I mean, I don't think it's productive to us and it's important to what we're doing for me to do any of this or for you to know any of this. But if he's going to go out there and be disruptive and give that, I think we should probably get out here and get the rest of the story in here so that people can actually be evaluating the truth. So whatever topic you want me to do a show on, a hotline on, for a two-hour period of time, I'll come in and I'll do a two-hour period of time and I'll give you the truth about anything that he's got out there. He's got a thing out there about praying and praying with Pat Robertson. It's like, man, sometime I'll do that program on that, what really happened there. This is just stupid. This is utterly ridiculous. I'll give you the whole story about that. Now, I guarantee you that'll be very, very entertaining, but I don't think it's going to be very damning to me. And I'll give you the whole shot of it, and I'll tell it to you in a way you'll know that what I'm telling you is absolutely right. It's absolutely true. I don't know if you'd ever be able to get Pat Robertson to tell you that it's true, but I can certainly show you and prove to you that it is. I've got all the details. You got that one article there that was written about me going down to CBN. I'd love to tell you the story about me going down to CBN. Happy to do it. So you tell me what you want to know in the next one. Do it as early as you can because I want to prep for it and be able to give you documentation. And I'll do another one and another one and another one and another one, and we'll just be going along doing these. I'll even do them after I leave here if I'm not done with them. I'll even do them after I leave here so that I can put all the stuff out there so that everybody that is confused by this ridiculousness can literally go in and listen to these and see what it is that they're evaluating. What I told you tonight is all documented in that book, The Alternative. Did you see anything that of any of the stuff that I told you tonight in anything that this man sent to you? No, because he doesn't know. He's just running out there like a fool, delighting and revealing his own mind. So anyway, that's what I came to tell you tonight. I've got it in the can, and tomorrow I will tell everybody where you can, hopefully tomorrow, certainly on the team leader call, I'll tell the team leaders where they can actually go and get this, somewhere in a back office somewhere where it'll be available just to people who are listening to this other dribble and they just need to get the full story. But I can't be updating everybody every time we hire some more people. I come back and tell the story again. So I'm putting it in there, in the can, where anybody can come in and get the truth. The truth will set us free. That's what our Bible says, and that's true. Anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for taking your time to do this. And if you want to hear another one, next week I'll put another one in the can. Wherever you get these in archives, you can play them anytime you want to, day, night, or whenever, because they'll all be in the archives. You can come in and you can get them, and that's it. Okay, we'll figure out what the rules are to get people in there, if there are any rules. I mean, Allison sometimes gets stuck on that. All right, and so we'll put this together, and you guys can come in and hear it anytime you want to. Somebody else say, well, look what this guy did. You say, yeah, that's show number 3. Go in there and take a look and see what this guy actually did do. You can't expect that the government that is involved in these technologies is going to ever tell you the truth. I mean, yes, sometimes court records are great and sometimes court records are true, but sometimes court records are not. Sometimes trials are great and wonderful and they do good things and they put bad people away in prison. Sometimes they do the opposite. And usually they don't really want to do that, but if they want to keep their position, they got to. And if anybody thinks that the world is such that that is not going on left and right, up and down, all the time, people like to laugh and say that's a conspiracy theory. Let me tell you something. That stuff goes on more often than you would ever imagine. Most people aren't as bullheaded as I am. Most people will not challenge them and take them up on the fight. Most people will not fight back and continue to fight back. I mean, I had one attorney general just said, that Dennis Lee guy, you can't stop him. You just can't stop him. He just keeps coming back stronger and stronger and stronger. That was the attorney general in one of these states. Anyway, maybe I'll tell you about the stories of the attorney generals, et cetera. I invited one to come to my show when I went on a tour. They actually came thinking I didn't know who they were, and I invited them up on the stage to test the unit. They don't know how to deal with somebody that actually is following God and is honorable and doesn't break laws. They don't know how to deal with that. They always think, well, we'll get him. We'll just get everything he's got, and we'll find all the laws that he violated. That's never worked with them, ever, with me, ever. And they've never won. I mean, you'd think that that would be like, they would be too ashamed to even, well, I did make a deal with them that I'd leave them alone if they left me alone. I also was partners with Ford Motor Company. You might want to know that story. If you do, I'll be happy to tell you that story. We have a videotape from an executive from Ford Motor Company that did a show for all of our supporters. We had 800 people at that show. A man right next to Alan Mulally, CEO of Ford Motor Company, talked to them about the testing that Ford Motor Company did on a technology that I developed to run car engines on water. And I don't mean the way these other guys are talking about it. I mean on water gas. Sometimes you need to find out what water gas is, because nobody, it's one of the best kept secrets in the world, water gas. And when I tell you about it, I'll tell you places to go find out about it, and you will learn the secret that most universities will not tell you about water gas. I mean water in the form of a gas, and how amazing that technology is. I can show you videos of things that we're doing, and I'll tell you about them, and you'll be like, man, I can't believe anybody would ever do that. And then I'll sell you the video. You can watch it. You can see it. I'll have to start making videos. I've got copies of all of this stuff. Anyway, now in conclusion, on this first tape in a series of 100 more just like it that have a point to prove and the evidence to back that point up, I have dealt with two of the only valid reasons for alarm for anyone who hears half the story. My name was changed by God 43 years ago, and I spent a little over a year in prison and almost a year in jail awaiting a trial over 30 years ago. Over the last 45 plus years of my life as a Christian, I have not ever actually been convicted of any crime other than a plea bargain that the other side did not keep. You have the facts to substantiate all that now. I actually did get convicted of a crime almost 50 years ago. I was in the construction business in a fake oil crisis of 1974. First blood. Caused me a whole lot more... Let's start again, Allie. So this is take two in conclusion. Let me get some more water. Okay, let's get going. In conclusion, on this first tape in a series of hundreds more just like it, all of which have a point to prove and the evidence to back that point up, I have dealt with two of the only valid reasons for alarm for anyone who hears half the story. My name was changed by God 43 years ago, and I spent a little over a year in prison and almost a year in jail awaiting a trial over 30 years ago. Over the last 45 plus years of my life as a Christian, I have not ever actually been convicted of a crime other than a plea bargain that the other side did not keep. I actually did get convicted of a crime almost 50 years ago. I was in the construction business in a fake oil crisis of 1974. You might call that first blood. Oil crisis caused me a whole lot more people in my business to have a serious business reversal. It was not a good time for construction companies. I did end up with outstanding bad checks. I pled guilty to writing them and got probation. I made restitution as I was ordered by the court to do, and it was over. That is my entire criminal history. A few years later, I became a Christian, and I'm proud to say that I am not aware of any law I have broken since that time. The details of that early business reversal will also be covered in this series. The only crimes since have been perpetrated against me, not by me, and against each of you. I have walked out my civil disobedience in opposition to possibly the richest self-interest group in the world, the fossil fuels industry, but also in opposition to the corrupt public officials across this land who abuse the laws of this land and work to deny the people their right to free enterprise on behalf of rich people who can pay corrupt officials so they do not have to compete. Their abuses have been legion, as you are about to fully understand if you can handle hearing all of the series I have to present to you. Hundreds of these stories, with evidence in the form of documents, articles, and video and audio tapes and more, stand ready right now to be revealed. Well, you have heard from me today. Now hear from God. When a person who has accepted the responsibility to follow Jesus Christ is told, as Peter and John were, to stop doing what their God told them to do, they have no choice, if they are truly Christians, but to continue to follow their God, whatever the consequences. But when you choose to disobey the government, then be prepared to face consequences. Dr. King wrote, "How does one advocate breaking some laws and obeying others?" There are two kinds of laws. There are just laws and there are unjust laws. Just laws square with God, and unjust laws go against harmony with God. As was experienced by the apostles, Christians are not spared from paying consequences for disobeying the government. Peter and John were told to speak no more the name of Jesus, but they were teaching Jesus the same day and then rejoiced that they had been considered worthy of suffering sacrifice for Christ because of their obedience to their God. I will suffer any sacrifice to stand for my God and my country, and I have. I am fully convinced no sacrifice is too great. But does that mean that because it is a privilege to stand for truth and morality and the real laws of this great country, it is any less painful or unjust that someone has to do that? Does that mean that as Christians and Americans, we do not have to stand up for our brothers and sisters who are suffering injustice for what we ourselves believe in? I am not gloating that my dear wife and I and my family have suffered greatly for what we believe is a worthy cause. To think that there may be some reward is not the motivation we seek. The truth is the motivation. The just cause is the motivation. The right standing in Him is the motivation. Following God against ruthless men is not easy. Standing for truth is not easy. I am not saying there is a limit to what I am willing to endure, because I am led by God and God's power is limitless. But I will not be silent and made to feel ashamed of the truth. I will not stop trying to contribute what I can toward building a fair and just society, no matter how infected it is with injustice. And I will do it, if necessary, in civil disobedience. there is one way to stop my story in the fullness of truth from going forward. My story will be embarrassing to powerful men and women who have a lot to be embarrassed and ashamed of. I struck a deal a decade ago, in essence, to give those people, leave those people alone if the government will leave me alone and treat me in accordance with just laws and stop the harassment. I am a man of honor. A deal is a deal. I have had peace from men for over a decade, but I will not be harassed any further for the crime of wanting to do good. All the phonies who try to look good and act like they want to end pollution keep screaming that they want it while they beat my brains out to stop me from bringing it. If some idiot or idiots is going to continue to harass me, then I am going to fight back in a Christian manner, and this story will have to continue to unfold. I do not need for myself to tell this story. God is the only one that matters, and He knows what I have done. He was there for the whole event. I do not care who else knows. So the rich and powerful self-interests that are at the center of my story may want to consider concentrating their resources on stopping this idiot or idiots from harassing me if they want me to stop my story. I have not done anything with my unwanted technical breakthroughs, as I agreed I would not. But I did not agree not to hold responsible those who illegally and immorally broke and twisted laws to deny everyone what we had to offer. I say to those who do not want my story out, stop the half-wits, or I will, in a way that will be very embarrassing to you. Then we can go forward with a plan to help our country and help our countrymen out of another precarious situation, and we can feel like we actually did something other than prove that we love our God, which He already knows. If the harassment continues, the story will continue. I will do episodes until the harassment stops, or until the public demand for them is too great to stop. That's up to you. The only thing that is up to me are the choices that I must make in my desire to follow my God. That ends our first episode of My, His Story. Thank you for listening. That's what I came to tell you tonight. So you got enough for tonight. And we'll do something else, whatever you guys, if only one person tells me what to do, that's what I'll do. If six people want a different thing, then maybe I'll flip a coin or something to do one of the six. If two people want the same thing, then, and everybody else is just all one person voting for something else, I'll do the one that two people went for. Okay? So anyway, I'll just keep them coming until you guys get tired of them. As long as anybody out of all the people I know are listening, I'll keep them coming. All right? You guys have a good day, good night, and play these anytime you need to. All right? Bye.